Blog Talk Radio.
Republican shill, as many now suspect, then he is delusional and
created a false hope for American liberty, supported by so many honest, liberty-loving people who put their faith in Ron Paul as a last chance for the restoration of America. I was disappointed but not surprised by Ron Paul's decision. His campaigns in 2008 and 2008 and 2012 have been riddled with Republican Party loyalists who made or influenced the fatal decisions to destroy the Ron Paul campaign. Americans must face the fact that the two political parties are fatally flawed, and this corrupt system will never give up its power without an all-out revolution. As I write this article, President Obama recently violated his oath of office to defend the Constitution for the 943rd time by signing his 943rd executive order, which strips away what was left of the American Constitution and Bill of Rights. One of his recent executive orders gives him the right to create hit squads, which can legally assassinate American citizens anywhere in the world. We now have foreign armies training in our cities and rural towns. Nonviolent protesters are being arrested and beaten by police. Occupy Wall Street has been occupied by informants, infiltrators, and provocateurs. American police now have 30,000 drones in use spying on American citizens and are being supplied daily with armored vehicles and tanks, as well as other military weapons to contain and disperse protesters. The police can also ignore all Fourth Amendment protections and arrest and detain American citizens indefinitely without trial. I have become sickened by all state, local, and federal governments. Some states have declared their sovereignty from this federal government. However, they also use draconian measures to stop protests or deny voters access to vote. One of the most totalitarian of all governments is the U.S. In the U.S. is not a state, but a city. Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City, is a notorious dictator who censors certain foods and smoking cigarettes outdoors and in public places. He has used his massive police force to break up and brutally beat and arrest thousands of Occupy Wall Street protesters, yet he is still in office and granted the support of New Yorkers. New Yorkers have a history of supporting dictatorial mayors. They were duped by the dictator Rudy Giuliani, who was responsible for the death or illness of over 10,000 first responders at the World Trade Center, by ordering that no one was allowed to wear respirators. He evicted or arrested thousands of homeless people and business owners during his draconian cleanup of Times Square and 42nd Street. Either New Yorkers are completely enslaved and stupid, or they are completely delusional to allow themselves to be overtaxed, beaten, censored, and imprisoned, and even killed by the tyrannical rule of their elected officials. I have given up on understanding why people prefer slavery and bondage over liberty and freedom. It appears to be the way of the world. Those who desire political freedom and political liberty are outcasts, outlaws, and rebels in American society. Those of us who understand the corruption of the entire society and speak out against it are alienated, marginalized, and censored. Those who try to protest or speak out in public are arrested and beaten by police and ignored or laughed at by the corporate-owned news media and their celebrated talking heads and news whores. Ron Paul was ignored and laughed at by them until they became fearful of his growing support, despite all of their greatest efforts to ignore and belittle his campaign and his supporters. When mainstream media realized that they were being laughed at and criticized by the blogosphere, that caused their network ratings and advertisers to hemorrhage, they had to do something drastic to end the bleeding. And either the Republican Party, controlled by their corporate masters, physically threatened Ron Paul or his family as they did with Ross Perot in 1992, or they infiltrated his campaign and ruined it, causing him to back out of the primaries. Either way, the result is the Ron Paul campaign is dead, and the naive hopes of all his supporters have been dashed, along with the last hope of restoring America to a free and prosperous nation without a revolution. The most interesting comment I read today on the Daily Paul website was by its publisher, who has been so overwhelmed by hate mail from former Paul supporters that he has taken a sudden vacation to China to hear his wife make a speech at a scientific forum. More likely, he needed to take his family out of the country for a while to get away from all the gun-toting libertarians who donated to Ron Paul's campaign and want their money back. So that, and that's on my website, laschoolshow.org. But, you know, it's, and that's, that was true about his site, by the way. That's,
wow.
He posted today.
Poor guy, huh?
Not a poor guy, he's a prick. He's the kind of, you know, he's one of the guys that
ran the campaign.
He ran that blog, you know.
Yeah.
And got all that money in there and did all that stuff, and then all of a sudden he's trying to, you know, tell the world that we're going to work at a different angle. Yeah. Right. My angle, your butt.
After they collected all that dough.
Yeah, tens of millions of dollars they got, you know, and where the hell
they
go.
People are upset, huh?
Oh, we don't want to go to the primaries anymore because we don't want to spend tens of millions of dollars
that you gave
collected.
Us.
Yeah, right. You know, there was these money bombs that they had where they collected millions and millions of dollars in 24 hours, you know what I mean, for this campaign, and yet now they're, you know.
Where's the money?
In their pockets. And
going to China.
It's his pockets.
Going to China with his family, huh?
Yeah, it's just a crock, you know. So, anyway.
Okay, what else?
Man.
This was something.
The Bono thing?
Oh, that made me sick.
Isn't he sick?
Oh, it's such a sellout.
Anybody who's a fan of Bono, man,
out of their mind.
You gotta be sick when you hear this stuff.
YouTube Bono, celeb partners with Monsanto, GA, to BioWreck, African farms, and GMOs. And this is
the activist post
by Randy Anata. At the GA summit held 2 weeks ago at Camp David, President Obama met with private industry and African heads of state to launch the new Alliance for Food Security and Nutrition, a euphemism for monocultured, genetically modified crops and toxic agrochemicals aimed at making poor farmers debt slaves to corporations while destroying the ecosphere for profit. And Bono of the rock group U2 is out shilling for Monsanto on this one. It's phase two of the Green Revolution. Tanzania, Ghana, Ethiopia are the first to fall for the deception, and Mozambique, Cote d'Ivoire, Burkina Faso, and other African nations lining up for the Grow Africa partnership under Obama's Global Agricultural Development Plan. In Obama pitches India model of GM genocide to Africa, Scott Creighton writes, but African civil society wants no part of this latest Monsanto-aligned public-private partnership. Whatever will the progressives do now that their flawless hero has teamed up with the most hated nemesis to exploit an entire continent?
Like they did to India
not that long ago. With a commitment of $3 billion, Obama plans to partner up with mega multinationals like Monsanto, Diageo, DuPont, Cargill, Vodafone, Walmart, PepsiCo, Prudential, Syngenta International, Swiss Re, because as one USA representative says, these are things that only companies do, like building silos for storage and developing seeds and fertilizers. Of course, that's an outrageous lie. Private citizens have been building their own silos for centuries. But it's true that only the BioWreck engineers will foist patented seeds and toxic chemicals on Africa. Crichton continues, Bono says that there has to be a public-private partnership in order to get this done, and that they are going to be using the ideas of the African people and farmers. Really? This is what the African farmer says to that. We request that governments, FAOs, the G8, the World Bank, the GAFSP, reconsider their promotion of public-private partnerships, which, as they are now conceived, are not suitable instruments to support the family farms, which are the very basis of African food security and sovereignty. And this is what was in the African civil society organizations. I wonder if that could be any clearer. They don't want the public-private partnership involved in this process. It's not enough that huge mega corporations are bleeding the nations of Africa by sucking the valuable mineral resources out of their hills. No, as Bono says about the development in Africa, They are future consumers for the United States. The president is talking business. This is good. It's a whole new development paradigm today. The old donor-recipient relationship is over. Volatility chimed in. The history of corporate agriculture and its green revolution is a perfect example of the unfulfilled promises and therefore proven lives of corporatism. What was the green revolution? With a huge one-off injection of fossil fuels and billions of thousands of agronomy, corporate agricultural temporarily increased yields within the monocultural framework. Just a second, we have a call.
Caller, I'm supposed to call her.
Well, why don't you pick up the phone and just say hello to her?
Yes,
you call. And so we're going to call Sue right back. She got a little nervous. I guess she didn't realize that we were going to call her. That's all quite all right. And but what do you think about that Bono? And promoting Monsanto and
Bono is such a traitor. He's such a sellout. My God, he'll sell his own soul.
He sold it already. I didn't think there was anything left there to sell.
Sure he did.
But apparently there is.
Oh, he's just working for them now.
Yeah. He's a huge disappointment. He was a lousy musician. I have to add that.
I think he is. We got Sue Wilson on the line here. She'll be on with...
Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you, Susan? This is Leo and Lila from the LA Stu Show. How are you?
Hello, Leo and Lila.
Yeah, welcome to our show.
She's my co-host. And,
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've checked out your site, and we've seen all kinds of good stuff that you've done. And we're kind of excited since we've been supporting the recall all along and, you know, very strong union backers.
So tell us
a little bit about the Media Center, Media Action Center, and what you've been up to, and all the right wing enemies that you've created over the last few years.
Well, I have plenty of those, including Rush Limbaugh, who called me out one time at length. You know, where did it begin? I think that people know, as they drive across this country, that if they turn on their radios, pretty much all they can get is hard right conservative talk radio to the exclusion of everything else.
That's true.
That is true.
You know, what people really don't know is if they go to the FCC to say, you know, we should be able to have some balance on our public airwaves, that we own these local radio airwaves, that the FCC says, oh, well, the corporations just have the First Amendment right to say what they want. Well, the good news is that that's true, but, you know, in the 60 days before an election, there's a law on the books that says you got to give the microphone to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did in Wisconsin was we fought like crazy to get that microphone back on the other side, not just for Wisconsin, but for every single community in this entire country come the general election. That's the work we've been doing at Media Action Center in the past few weeks.
Now, were you able to have anything changed before the recall, or this is all going to take place after the now?
Well, Lila, I tell you what, we did make our announcement. Here's what we did. We physically monitored the 5 conservative talk radio shows in Milwaukee and found out that each day, every single day during the Scott Walker campaign, it was only a 28-day campaign, and every single day, we had those 5 stations give an equivalent of about $70,000 a day in free advertising to Scott Walker and none to the other side.
Wow.
Yeah, wow, big wow. You start adding that up, this is turning into big money and even bigger influence, okay? So in the middle of the recall, we announced our report. We asked the stations for comparable time. In fact, Tom Barrett supporters were continually asking for comparable time. The stations ignored them. And so in the middle of the recall, we made a complaint to the FCC. That complaint is available at the MediaActionCenter.net website. Bottom line, the FCC rightly understands that this is going to become a constitutional issue. This is a much bigger complaint than they normally get. They normally get complaints like somebody said the F word and I want to have them fined. This is really getting to pit the – this is pitting the free speech rights of we the people versus the free speech rights of the corporations.
Yep. But now the corporations are identified as people by the Supreme Court.
Yeah. So, you know, so how do you think that ruling will turn out?
Well, I tell you what. They may be persons according to the Supreme Court, but we, the real people, the people in the community, own local radio and TV airwaves. I'm not talking about cable TV. That's corporate-owned. If you make a business deal to bring that in your house, you've done that. But what we own is the airwaves. You've got a bunch of broadcasters everywhere who've got a bunch of microphones and fancy equipment, but the only way that that equipment works is if they broadcast over our public airwaves, and they made a deal with the public. They made a deal that said they would serve the public interest in exchange for the privilege of broadcasting in our public airwaves.
That's right.
And I, Sue Wilson, am here to say it's time for us to stand up and say we want what's ours back. I tell you what, I just posted an article on, and it's all over the internet now, and I'm talking also about Citizens United. You know, the action we did in Wisconsin is specific to conservative talk radio. But everybody is so correctly concerned about Citizens United and this influx of money into ads. Did you know that half of all of the money that goes that's coming from Citizens United is flowing directly into your local TV stations?
Wow.
And you own those airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
We own those airwaves. It's time to start standing up to those TV stations and going, you know, sweetheart, you fact-check these ads, because if you don't, we're going to sue you. We're going to hold you liable, because we are allowed to do that. Just nobody knows the rights that we have.
Right.
Well, you know, Sue, we've been long activists in the media, and we've gone up against our state governments and everything to get freedom and access to our programs and to programs like ours, and for the last 10 or 12 years. And we found that, particularly in our state of Connecticut, it's as corrupt as hell. Okay, and the people that are overseeing these utilities, okay, are even more corrupt than we ever thought would be possible. But and politicians, it's just the most disgusting den of thieves you've ever seen in this state, and I'm sure it's the same way in almost all the other states, or in all the other states, but. What we found now, that what bothers me so much is this ruling by the Supreme Court, okay, that now says that they have the rights of individuals. So basically, you know, aren't they saying that corporations also own the airwaves as much as anybody else? This opens up a huge can of worms that I don't think people are prepared yet to recognize, you know.
What's your opinion of that?
Well, I think that certainly you're right in that, you know, if a corporation is an individual, does the individual own the airwaves? Answer, yes. Now, the corporations have a whole lot more money than we individuals. But here's the good, and I'm talking about we people that breathe and, you know, get thrown in jail when we commit crimes instead of, you know, having our hands slapped. But here's the big thing. There's a whole lot more of we real breathing individuals than there are of corporations. And if we breathing individuals put boots on the ground and we start walking inside of these TV stations and we start walking inside of these radio stations to demand to see the files, which we're allowed to do, people don't know you can walk into your local TV station and say, I want to see your political file. I want to see just what you're doing, and they've got to let you in because we own it. So, you know, the thing is we've been doing these kind of public files inspections, but we may get 3-4 people. Gosh, you know what? If we had 30, 40 people walking into TV and radio stations every single day across the country, those corporations would start to shudder, and that's our right. There's a whole lot more of us than there is of them. It's just time for us to band together and start standing up for what's ours.
Well, Well, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. But at the same time, these sons of bitches are the kind of people that will kick you out of the station or have you arrested on false charges. Okay, and the police departments and all these kinds
they don't know you're right.
States, you know, they don't give a damn. I mean, they're serving the corporate interests as well. I mean, you know, I'm so disgusted too at what's happened in the last in the last couple of years. All right, especially recently with the Occupy Wall Street movement and all the protests in the last year, to see the corporate owned police departments, okay, coming in and beating up protesters, arresting thousands of protesters.
That happened in New York City.
That happened in New York City. Happened in Seattle. It happened. It happened in many, many states.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in Chicago during which was very, very suppressed. That coverage very, very suppressed by the media. So I mean. As far, you know, there's no question in my mind that we need activism in the media. But, again, you know, they are so bought and sold. I mean, they you know, everybody is. Even the future Republican candidate here, Mitt Romney, says corporations are people. All right? So, you know, how are you going to
tackle this problem?
How can you tackle this problem? All right? With any force, with any power, all right, when you have this kind of opposition, okay, which will and they have all the power. You don't have any power, Sue.
Well,
I don't have any
power. She's telling us that she does that.
Well,
but
they can come in and arrest you, and they can detain you indefinitely now. They can beat you. They can destroy your life. They can do whatever they do, okay, without any redress, okay, and without any courts, you know, without any court redress. So what can you say, you know, to people, you know, to keep them motivated? I don't know. I'm lost. I have been lost for quite some time.
So I guess what Leo really wants to know is what is your plan?
We're impotent, you know.
What is your plan for this? And do you have a group of supporters who are willing to go into these local radio stations and TV stations to help you across the country? Are you getting support throughout the United States for your cause?
Well, I tell you what, Lila. You talked a little bit about Occupy, and I am
mm-hmm.
with Occupy Wall Street. I'm not in the Sacramento area, okay?
Yeah.
And one of the actions that we did was Occupy Clear Channel. And on one day, we had people in 9 cities descend upon Clear Channel. Now, Clear Channel got wind of it. We leaked it the Friday before the Monday we were going to do this, and we did that on purpose. We really ruined Clear Channel's weekend, and that was a lot of fun.
Okay.
Because every Clear Channel station across the country was bracing for, oh, my God, what could happen here? Well, we only went to 9 cities, and we only sent a few people in. We had about 25 people in Sacramento that we sent in.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a start of something. And, you know, here's what I said then, and here's what I'm going to say now. We've got to let go of the fear, all right? When it comes to these public files, this is the one area that the FCC will fine those stations tens of thousands of dollars if they do not allow the public in. And the day that we occupied Clear Channel in Sacramento, I wore my hoodie, baby, and I'm saying, you know, I'm not going to get arrested. I'm too old for this. I've been doing this since you don't even want to. I worked under the Fairness Doctrine. That's how old I am. I'm not going to get arrested for sleeping in some public park. That is not what I'm going to do. But if they turn me away from a public file inspection at a station that I own, that I own, then damn straight, I will go to jail. And I'm ready to do that. And all I'm saying to people like you, Leo and Lila, is dang well, start publicizing it if they send me in. Because this is where we've got to start. You know, not just, we've got to, here's the motto of the Media Action Center, okay? Know your rights, be empowered, put boots on the ground and publicize. Any way that we can tell our stories is how we must. But the biggest thing is, to start really fully understanding our rights and exercising them. And see, this is what conservative talk radio has done to us. over the past generation, they've been telling us all these lies, and one of the biggest lies is that we don't have any rights in broadcasting. Excuse me, but we own broadcasting. It's just almost nobody gets that fact. And so, you know, the number one thing I love to bring to people is do this public file inspection, and you are going to walk out so empowered. We did this in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You know, I traveled the country with my film Broadcast Blues, and Broadcast Blues is a terrific movie that shows people what our rights are and also that, you know, how we can exercise them, okay? And after doing a tour there, I took some people to do a public file inspection in Milwaukee, and they were scared to death we were going to get arrested. And I said, we're not going to get arrested. And sure enough, we walked in, and this is a typical scenario. We walked into the station, and they opened up the doors for us, and they let us back into this nice office where we got to spend hours perusing through the files. And the people I brought were so excited because they're going, oh, my God, you're right. We actually do own these airwaves. It was the single most empowering thing they had done to get it, to get what we're talking about here, that local TV and local radio belongs to us. Now, let me bring this back to Citizens United. And I kid you not, there is a rule on the books that, okay, here's the way campaign ads work for television and radio. But TV is really where all the ads go. I mean, some ads go to radio, but TV is what everybody wants, right?
Yep.
Well, turns out if you're a candidate, if you're the person running for office, you can run an ad on any broadcast station. The radio or TV station has to take your ad, and they do not get to vet that ad in any way. So you can say whatever you want, which also means if you're the candidate, you can lie to the public on the airwaves, and there's nothing that we or the stations can do about it. However, if you're a third-party ad, now, Citizens United is specific to third-party money coming into the political system, third-party meaning other than candidate. Could be a corporation buying an ad to support a candidate. Could be a union buying an ad. Any third party. Well, see, the TV stations don't have to take those ads. It's their choice if they take those ads or not. And if they do take those ads, and if that ad lies to the public, we can hold the station liable.
Oh, really?
We actually can hold the station liable. Yes, I've just written this huge piece. It's up on Huffington Post. It's an op-ed news right now. And it's called, Did Our Public Airwaves Win It for Walker?
Now, let me ask you a question. Has anybody ever are you the first person to take them to task about this?
I sure as heck am, because I spend my entire life, I'm such a wonk, I spend my entire life looking for where's the Achilles heel, how do we get to it? So on the TV side, on the Citizens United side, that's what we found. The more important action right now, though, and gosh, I hope maybe some of your listeners can help us, because we really need people to sign our petition to support this at the FCC. We have really found the Achilles heel of talk radio by saying, you know, I've given up on trying to get talk radio balanced, you know, throughout the whole year. We've talked about bringing back the fairness doctrine. It's never going to happen. I just think I could, you know, I don't think it's going to happen. But we found, again, this really narrow, obscure little rule that hasn't been dusted off in about 25 years. So we picked it up and dusted it off, and by gosh, it says that legally both sides get a chance at that microphone in the 60 days before an election. Well, if Scott Walker recall was the perfect place to prove that this is what's happening all across the country. And I'm the first person also to bring this one up at the FCC, and that's why they're going, oh, this is a First Amendment case here. We're going to have to take a close look at this. Because what this is really about is finding whatever legal means necessary in order to exercise our rights, our rights as the owners of this local TV and radio. Yeah, those corporations have some rights too, but you know what they've been doing? It's called private censorship.
Mm-hmm.
They've been privately censoring. They decide who gets to be on those microphones. They get to decide that their First Amendment rights get to be honored, but our First Amendment rights, the 70% of the population that doesn't buy into this whole conservative talk radio credo, the 70% doesn't have any rights? No, actually, guess what? We do. And the Supreme Court ruled in 1969 that these corporations do not have the right to privately censor voices on our scarce public airways. That law is on the books today, but nobody's thought about it.
So
well, let's think about it.
Do you have any big legal gun helping you?
At this point, we've got lawyers who are we're talking with. I can tell you that I can track on my website, and I know that the biggest communications lawyer law firm, the biggest communications law firm in Washington, D.C., is looking very carefully at this case, and I can tell you they don't want to represent us. They would represent the broadcasters, okay?
That's
so what we're doing at present.
The money is, yeah.
Well, exactly. And it's really hard because, you know, everybody wants to represent the broadcasters and nobody wants to go up against the broadcasters except for we the people. At this point,
we're relying
on the FCC.
Yeah. Are the ACLU, wouldn't the ACLU be interested in this?
You know, they well may. And that's part of why I'm really grateful to be on your show right now. Because what I need is for people to hear this story and go, well, wait a minute. You're telling me that the radio stations in Milwaukee gave more than $1 million to Scott Walker in free airtime and denied Tom Barrett's people, and they've got this complaint, and the FCC is going, oh, my God, this is a First Amendment case. I mean, yeah, it would seem like a natural for ACLU or someone like that, but I'm grateful to be able to talk about it on your show because this is how we get the word out on this and get some interest in helping with this. And the Joe Public out there, you can help by going to our website and signing our petition saying, yes, we support this. We think this is an important rule, and we need to have balance at least in the 60 days before elections for criminy. I mean, come on.
So give our listeners your website.
Okay. For the activist website, it's mediaactioncenter.net. And there you will find the whole complaint and enjoy reading it. You will find a petition button that you can sign. And also, gosh, folks, if you got a few extra bucks to chip in, this has been very expensive, and we would appreciate any donations you can help us with. I also have a website called SueWilsonReports.com, and that is where I archive many, many stories that I've been writing for years on these issues. Either way, and if you make a donation to Media Action Center, I'll send you a copy of Broadcast Blues, and I'll sign it for you. You can also find copies for sale at Sue Wilson Reports. But the bottom line here, folks, is that wake up. We have so much more power in broadcasting than anyone has ever told us. It's just a function of saying, hello, folks. This is ours. Let's rise. Let's take it back.
Yeah, that'd be great if you could make an impact on this process. It would make such a difference. I really do believe it would. How about the amount of money that poured into Wisconsin?
Well, I mean, it's just outrageous how much money poured into Wisconsin.
Just unbelievable.
And, I mean, huge. It's amazing to me because, if we look ahead at the general election this fall, they're talking about $3.3 billion are going to pour into local TV stations' pockets, okay? $3.3 billion. Now, let's see. How much money did the entire health care bill cost over 10 years? Wasn't it $700 million? Wasn't that the number? What was the number? Anyone remember?
I don't remember.
But you know the thing that frightens me most is that I recall complaining about this back in 2008 and back in 2004 on the air about all the monies that were being spent on these elections. And even back in 2008, I believe it was, Obama had come up with something like a couple hundred million dollars at that time, okay, that he spent on through the Democratic Party and, of course, his election. But McCain was almost equal to that, okay? But now they're talking about $1 billion or more for each campaign in 2012 to be spent by the media, on the media. So it's an obscene amount of money. To be thrown at the presidency, all right, and You know, and it's all being done by corporate donations, you know, not by you and I, but by corporations because of this new law. All right?
Absolutely.
And the sick thing about it is Romney and Obama, I mean, there's two peas in the pod. I mean, they're identical with their the donors are Goldman Sachs and Wall Street and everybody else, you know, the big money people. So it's like the amount, it's almost ludicrous. But the only people that are really, really, the people who are losing are you and I, the American people. But the companies that are winning are going to be all of the all of the broadcasters. All right.
Well, absolutely. And you know, again, half of the money is going into local TV. Half of it.
That's
a half a billion bucks. So the question is, what are we the people? Now, remember, these local TV stations only get to broadcast if they serve the public interest. So what exactly are we getting back out of this? Not a heck of a lot. So the big question is then, how do we hold our local stations accountable? We've talked about the lying ads and can hold them liable, but a very effective technique has been to form a group in your area. We can form, if you want to, contact me, and we form Media Action Center groups all over the country, to go to meet with local station management and talk about things like we want to see debates on television. We want to see 5 minutes of local campaign coverage every single night on your local news. We want to see, what laundry list can we come up with that, you know, we want real political coverage, not just on the horse race, and hold the local station accountable. And then if they don't, you know, you can always start protesting. You can hold boycotts against your local station, saying you're not serving the public interest. Going to the FCC and making a complaint is a difficult thing to do and to make it stick, okay? But, you know, one-on-one, community-based community, these stations do cave to public pressure, and that's what we've got to start doing.
Well,
putting the pressure on them.
To tell you the truth, I was extremely, extremely disappointed by the Occupy Wall Street group, because, you know, this Occupy the Media group. I mean, these guys should have been down at the NBC studios in New York City by the thousands protesting, on the Today Show outside their window, you know what I mean? Or these guys should be down at Fox News, you know, throwing stones, for crying out loud, at their, you know. Instead, you didn't see any of that. That did not happen. All right.
Well, we did some of it, a couple things. Occupy LA joined with Media Action Center to protest the Fox shareholders meeting, and Rupert Murdoch was there, and it was a big deal. We did. The thing is, you know, a lot of these Occupy people are young people, and I'm going to tell you my truth, Lila and Leo, the younger people don't really get the reach of media. Even though Occupy Wall Street said that the lies of the corporate media are part of the problem, and they're right, you know, when you go to these Occupy groups, and the beautiful thing about Occupy is it's community by community, and it's a lot of people getting together and deciding together what they want to work on. But it's very difficult. It's very unwieldy, too, because it is, you know, every community is different, and so many of these people are very young. They're a younger generation. Their means of communication are Facebook. And, you know, for them to think seriously about, say, the impact of radio, I mean, I can give them the numbers. These kids would do, you know, they would stream live their little GA meetings and say, oh, we got 400 hits, 400 people saw this. I'm going, and Rush Limbaugh, you know, had 20 million people listening to his radio show today.
I think
when they get together again and sort of get a resurgence, maybe they'll recognize the importance of what you're saying.
No, but what I admire about them, okay, is they're willing to put their bodies on the line.
Yeah.
Right? And they got a lot of courage there and a lot of, and you know, like we did in the 60s and the 70s and we were out there. But now we're seeing people in their 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s out there standing. understanding out there. They understand the value of radio and TV, all right? But yet, for some reason, they're not directing that movement. You know, I would love to see. I don't know. Maybe we're just being ignored. Maybe we're so. I don't know. I mean, I find that they pretty much shun anybody over 45, 50 years old in these movements. All right. You know, they just look at you like, yeah, okay. You know, and go in your car and rest. You know what I mean?
I don't think that's true.
Oh yeah, Lila. You haven't seen it, but it's like it's for real. The peace movement, the anti-war movement, was something else. That was all kinds of people, and you know, down there and you know, protesting, and that didn't do much good either. That didn't do any good. But you know, even though millions of people were out there on the streets,
but I think you have the right tact. In that you have laws on the books that you can hold their feet to the fire, and I certainly admire you for finding that and for going in this direction. Because people have something they can attach to, and that's meaningful, and that that the corporations probably won't like too much. You know, because it's there. It's definable, and they're going to have to stand up to what you say about it. And I really admire you for finding this and for starting this movement. And I hope our listeners at home will go onto your blog and your website, which you mention it one more time before we say goodbye.
Thank you, Lila. The blog is SueWilsonReports.com, and the activist site, which, you know, really we're trying to do more than just protest, because protests are stunts. We're trying to find laws that we can put teeth into our protests. It's mediaactioncenter.net.
And I sure wish you
the best.
I think it's a fabulous idea. I think you're on the right track. And I urge people to go to your site, sign the petition, and be part of a movement that's going to be successful.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
So Susan,
you're welcome.
Thank you very much for being on, and we hope to have you on again and hear your updates.
Great.
Okay, good night. Thank you. And that was Sue Wilson with the Media Action Center.
And we have Woody on the line, so let's go to his music. Get right down here.
Versus the San Antonio Spurs in favor of a smaller lineup. but I got to give the advantage to the Thunder. Power forward position. The Heat has Shane Battier. He took over for Chris Bosh. Bosh should be playing some more minutes, though, you know, because due to his abdominal injury. So, you know, it's going to be a little mismatch there. And the Thunder have Gibiak, and his offense is catching up to his defense. The NBA's top shot blocker is a thundering finisher at the rim, and he can hit open jump shots. And, you know, his range might limit his control of the paint a little bit on defense, but we'll have to see. Again, advantage to the Thunder. Small forwards. Obviously, you have LeBron James versus Kevin Durant. Now, LeBron James, he's run three of the last four NBA MVPs. Now, Durant, on the other hand, has won the last three NBA scoring titles. However, James's game is just a smidgen better. Remember, James won the NBA MVP award as compared to the scoring title, so that kind of says a little bit about, you know, how good LeBron is. As much as I hate LeBron, the guy is a beast, and he probably is, you know, better than Durant. Not by a lot, mind you, but enough. So advantage to the Heat. Shooting guards. You got D-Wade. You know, in 2006, he was 2006 Finals MVP. He's still capable of taking over game when necessary. The Thunder have Sefolsha. He's a proven defensive stopper. He'll spend some time on James and Wade. But he showed during the Western Conference Finals he can make some open jump shots, but you got to get the advantage to the Heat. Point guards. Heat got Chalmers. Thunder have Westbrook. He's kind of like Chicago Bulls' Derrick Rose. He's one of the most athletic point guards going. He, you know, sometimes he can get frazzled and fall into a bad shooting habits, but he has so far kept those under control in the playoffs. Advantage Thunder. Reserves. The Heat's bench is kind of garbage. I'm not even going to bother going into it. Advantage Thunder, for sure. Coaching. Definitely not the Heat. The Heat's coach, I think, is just absolutely horrible. Scott Brooks can out-coach Spoelstra any day of the week. That's another advantage to the Thunder. X-Factor, you know, probably give it to the Heat just because, you know, Bosh, James, and Wade might actually get their act together. You never know. And they might just go crazy, but we'll have to see. And they got a little bit more playoff experience than the Thunder. Advantage Heat on that one, but, you know. Overall, I think what it's going to come down to is the Thunder have a better team and a longer bench, and I think they're going to put the Heat in their place. Probably be Thunder in seven, maybe even six. Might be four games to two, but we'll have to wait and see. Okay, from the court to the courtroom. The first victim in the Sandusky sex case has testified. The man, then a baby-faced blonde teenager, but now identified as victim number four in the Jerry Sandusky sexual abuse case, took the stand Monday in Center County District Court and described to the jury in graphic detail the disturbing relationship that developed between him and the disgraced Penn State football coach. The man, now 28, said he and Sandusky engaged in soap battles in campus showers and in hotel rooms, and that the former Penn State defensive coordinator touched him on his leg like I was his girlfriend during car road trips. Absolutely disgusting. One particular incident he described in a Texas hotel room before a bowl game was particularly horrific. Sandusky, the man testified, approached him in the bathroom and placed his hands on the teenager's shoulders and pushed down, instructing the boy to go down there and perform oral sex, threatening to send the boy home if he didn't comply. Now, that's one time when you want to be sent home. Only the unexpected entrance of Sandusky's wife, Dottie, prevented the incident from escalating, the man said. Jesus Christ. The start of the trial included a defense bombshell during the opening statements when the Sandusky's lawyer, Joseph Amendola, said that his client would testify and tell the jurors in his own words what happened between Sandusky and his accusers. The 68-year-old Sandusky is accused of 52 counts of sexual abuse with 10 young boys over a 15-year period. God, to me, the trial sounded like it's already over as of today. All they needed was one victim. And I find find it absolutely ludicrous that this guy is going to have the nerve to get up on the stand. Of course, I guess if you get away with something for, you know, 15 or 20 years and you're doing it right out in the open, I guess you must think you're invincible. And then in your head, you don't see anything wrong with your behavior. I guess it just shows kind of how sick he is. But, I mean, you can't put this guy in jail long enough for my liking, you know. And one of the drawbacks is, you know, he's an older man now. You know, he's 68 years old. I mean, he ruined young boys' lives, and he's not paying for it now, you know, now that he's an older guy. You know, you give him, what, 25 years as a death sentence, but so what? I mean, he ruined their lives. I mean, it's just absolutely ludicrous just what some of these people think they can get away with. You know, frankly, I think they should give him a death penalty or cut his junk off. I don't know. But more to come with this, and, you know, the case just disgusts me as it goes on. Speaking of just thinking you can get away with anything, here's another guy in the news whom I cannot stand. University of Connecticut and U.S. Women's Olympic basketball coach Gino Auriemma, the pride of Connecticut. I've seen Gino is God in windows all over Hartford. He has been named in an employment discrimination lawsuit filed by a security official for the team who claims she was removed from her Olympic assignment after she rebuffed Auriemma's attempt to grab her and kiss her. The NBA and USA Basketball are also named in the suit, which was filed in New York State Supreme Court by NBA security official Kelly Hardwick, a former New York City undercover narcotics detective and law school graduate. Pretty good credentials. The suit states that Auriemma grabbed and tried to forcibly kiss Hardwick, who was working as a security official for the team at a basketball tournament in Russia in 2009. Hardwick described the incident and complaint, saying it took place in a hotel October 2009. As plaintiff put her hand through the door, defendant Auriemma approached her from behind, took hold of her left arm, and as she turned, he forcibly tried to kiss her on the mouth. The complaint said plaintiff was startled but utilized her training as a police officer and security professional, reacted quickly by shoving him away and stating, "What are you doing? You better check yourself before you get hurt." Well, I bet Auriemma has rarely ever heard that when he's come on to some lovely girl that maybe plays basketball for him for the state of Connecticut. More to come, hopefully, and I hope he turns out to look like a real jerk. Speaking of looking like a real jerk, the Clemens trial seems to be winding down. And this is the Clemens trial by the numbers. There was 46 witnesses, 26 days of testimony in the trial, 3 jurors dismissed, 2 for sleeping. 30 injections, Ryan McNamee said he gave Clemens in 98, 2000, and 2001. 15, number of hours Clemens' lawyer, Rusty Hardin, cross-examined McNamee, not bad. 1 in 15.4 trillion, probability of finding a white American besides Clemens with a DNA profile matching cells found on a cotton ball McNamee says he used after injecting Clemens. 1 in 449, probability of finding a white American besides Clemens with DNA profile matching cells used on the needle McNamee said. 179 individuals interviewed by federal agents investigating Clemens since March 2008. 7, number of cases lead agent John Longmire of FBI worked on while also investigating Clemens. 15,732 pages of Clemens family bank records Fed seized. 16,000 routine monthly cash withdrawal for Clemens reflected in bank records. You know, the number I was looking for would be the number of the amount, the dollar amount, how much money they spent on this bullshit case against Roger Clemens. Who gives a rat's ass if he did steroids just like everybody else did? And I care less that he lied to Congress about it, because congressmen lie to Congress every day of the goddamn week. Who gives a shit? And amazingly enough, from what I'm seeing in this case, Clemens had an actual shot at beating this case for a reason that many defense lawyers beat murder cases. It's called chain of custody. The evidence in which McNamee has given the state or the government to use against Clemens, you know, it was put in with other evidence. It could be contaminated. There were other athletes' needles in his can that this guy saved and everything else. And, you know, these are the kind of things that, you know, that defense attorneys love, and they certainly, you know, they brought forward an expert witness that they had, which the government really gave the guy a hard time to qualify as an expert, but he did qualify, and he came in, and he said some real interesting things concerning chain of custody, evidence, and everything else. And, you know, a lot of times cases come down to whose expert do you believe the most? And I guess that's what we're going to see. We're going to find out whose expert the jurors believe the most. Frankly, I think they might take Clemens. It's going to be interesting, I tell you that. It's going to be interesting. But as I said, who really cares? They spent millions of dollars on the Barry Bonds case, and he ended up getting house arrest. I mean, these are your tax dollars. Just getting flushed down the toilet. Speaking of toilets, I remember when it came out that the government was paying like $32,000 for toilets for the Navy. I mean, this is the kind of waste, and you wonder why this country is, you know, slow, bankrupting itself. You know, it's for reasons like this. Anyway, that's it for this week. Let me just add in real quickly. The Yankees are playing fantastic, and the world is correct. The Yankees are in first, and the Red Sox are in last. Life couldn't be any better. That's it for this week. Shout out to all my woodheads out there, Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, Greg at AFS, everyone at the Northeast Athletic Club, especially my partner, Money Mike. See you all next week. Go Thunder.
Great.
All right. Thank you, Woody.
So we thank Woody for being on, and
we've run out of time.
Yeah, we've run out of time.
So we thank you for being with us, and stay tuned tomorrow night for another show.
For another show, we have, and tomorrow night we have our guest who wrote the book.
We can't find the book.
Have here for some reason.
We're interviewing an author
we're
anyway.
15 Steps to Feudalism, okay, Corporate Feudalism, and the author will be with us tomorrow night, and we'll be discussing the book, 15 Steps to Corporate Feudalism. How the Rich Convinced America's Middle Class to Eliminate Themselves, as by Dennis Marker.
So that should be a good one. So yep. I hope you enjoyed this evening's show. Stay tuned for us tomorrow night.
Yep.
And we hope you have a good evening, folks. Good
yep.
night.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Get our music.
There it is. Okay, thanks, everyone. Good night.